And we move to the final case this morning, Light v. Carraway.
May it please the court. May it please the court. My name is Sabrina Gunther, and I represent petitioner appellant Augustus Light. Mr. Light was wrongfully sentenced as an armed career criminal and currently serves a sentence that was incorrectly extended by at least 7 years. This court set out three factors for relief under 28 U.S.C. section 2241. There's no question that Mr. Light meets the first factor. He relies on a statutory interpretation case, Begay v. United States. For the second factor, the Eighth Circuit itself has recognized that Begay overruled its prior interpretation of the Armed Career Criminal Act. The government has not explained how, in the face of that acknowledgement, Mr. Light could have successfully made his challenge either on direct appeal or during his first Section 2255 motion. Indeed, he could not have done so. Mr. Light meets the third factor because he does not have the requisite number of predicate offenses to qualify as an armed career criminal. The government concedes that criminal vehicular operation is not a violent felony. None of the other offenses that the government raises qualifies either. Contrary to the government's contention, Mr. Light's conviction for fleeing is not a violent felony. Mr. Light was convicted under Subdivision 3 of the Minnesota statute, which governs only nonviolent fleeing. Minnesota separately defines and more severely punishes violent fleeing under Subdivision 4.
Wait a second. Subdivision 4 is about death or bodily injury, right?
That is correct.
3 is about just fleeing with a motor vehicle.
How is that different
from the Indiana statute in Sykes?
In Sykes, Your Honor, they did not distinguish or punish differently the nonviolent conduct from the violent conduct. And therefore,
Wait. You know, I'm sorry, but violent versus nonviolent doesn't depend on the outcome, death or bodily injury or not. Sykes, I understood to say, in essence, it's the risks created by fleeing from the police in a motor vehicle that makes it a violent crime. And why isn't, I would think that that would say also apply to the Minnesota statute, and I thought that's what the Eighth Circuit held in Bartels.
That is what the Eighth Circuit held in Bartels, but we submit that the Bartels was incorrectly decided because Sykes, the opinion in Sykes did not reach the Minnesota statute because there's a crucial distinction between the Minnesota statute and the Indiana statute, which is that the Indiana statute did not punish more severely the kind of conduct that created a substantial risk of physical injury.
So we would have to overrule the Eighth Circuit?
Well, not overrule, Your Honor, but disagree with.
Disagree with.
And send the case back to the District of Minnesota?
For resentencing.
And further review by the Eighth Circuit? How would this work?
Well, no, Your Honor. Since we're on a petition under 2241, the Southern District of Indiana has jurisdiction.
And would be sentence?
Yeah.
And we would request that you enter a writ and remand with instructions to lower Mr. Light's sentence because he doesn't qualify.
Or just to consider the question in the first instance.
Well, it is true that the Indiana court did not consider this question in the first instance.
Nor did the Minnesota court.
Also true. But we believe that this court can resolve these issues on appeal.
Could you, I got to say, I don't think I've ever seen a case in which 2241 relief was actually granted across circuit lines. Can you give us some direction as to some case authority as to why you think that's the right course?
Well, Brown versus Carraway, Your Honor, the Seventh Circuit granted relief under Section 2241 for a case that arose out of the Third Circuit. and the defendant had been sentenced in the Third Circuit, and this court determined that he was entitled to relief because he was...
So where did we send it?
You remanded to the Southern District of Indiana for a reduced sentence.
Okay.
We would submit that this court can do the same thing here. In addition to our point that fleeing is not a violent felony under the Minnesota statute, the government has only raised Mr. Light's fleeing conviction for the first time in its brief on appeal. And it cannot retroactively rely on that conviction because to do so would violate Mr. Light's rights under the Due Process Clause. At the time of Mr. Light's sentencing...
Right, but if the sentence is set aside, he can be resentenced, right? I mean, if the enhancement is set aside, he can be resentenced.
He could be resentenced, Your Honor, but nonetheless, he does not qualify for resentencing under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Well, that depends on whether we take into account the fleeing conviction, right? And whether it's violent. The Eighth Circuit has said it's violent. You said even if it is, the government can't rely upon it because of due process reasons.
That's correct.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit in particular? Because the argument seems to be that Sykes was an unexpected development. Mr. Light seems to be saying, I can take advantage of changes in case law that benefit me, but the government is prohibited from taking advantage of changes in case law that strengthen its position.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, in Marks versus the United States, the Supreme Court held in looking at a due process challenge regarding the obscenity laws that its holding in Miller could not apply retroactively to increase the scope of conduct that would be criminal, but any constitutional benefits that Miller granted could be used retroactively.
That's the Supreme Court overruling clearly controlling nationally applicable law. I assume the same reasoning would not apply to the Supreme Court resolving a circuit split. Or would it? Because Mr. Sykes was sentenced under the Supreme Court's decision to serve as an armed career criminal.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So it wasn't a violation of due process to sentence him that way. Why would it be a violation to sentence Mr. Light that way?
Well, the change in law came years later for Mr. Light. And
not a change in law, is it? I mean, it's just a resolution of an uncertain question of law nationally.
Well, certainly the decisions that the Eighth Circuit made with respect to this particular provision, which Sykes did not reach, did change.
That would seem to suggest your position would require that Sykes be applied retroactively in circuits where the Supreme Court agreed with their point of view, but not for any circuits who had applied a different law to similar statutes for flight in a motor vehicle. That seems very odd.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Our contention is that Sykes doesn't reach this particular statute. So the real change in law was the Eighth Circuit.
The Eighth Circuit has said it does, right?
Well, the Eighth Circuit did rely on Sykes to reach the Minnesota statute and say that it had... It was, in fact, a violent felony, even though that the Eighth Circuit had previously held it was not.
Right. So I'm trying to find out why the Supreme Court's resolution of a circuit split creates a due process problem for people who benefited from earlier circuit law.
Well, certainly Mr. Light had no way of knowing that fleeing would have been a violent felony. It was not identified in his PSR. The government has not identified it at any point before their brief here. And in addition to that, there was no circuit split at the time that the government or that Mr. Light was sentenced in 2004. I'd like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
So just one quick question. Is his pre-sentence report in the record here?
It should be in the record, yes, Your Honor.
Where?
We did not submit it, Your Honor, but that was because the clerk informed us that you would have a copy because it is confidential.
Okay. I've got it, but we had to get it from the Eighth Circuit. Mm.
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Gerald Coraz. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney representing the warden respondent in this case. The procedural posture of this case is very important, and that is that the case is brought under Section 2241 pursuant to the Savings Clause provision of 2255E. It's important because at this point, to be entitled to relief, Mr. Life must make a claim of actual innocence. In his case, it's actual innocence to the sentence imposed, but that's been recognized. We don't dispute that. But he has to make a showing of factual innocence in addition to being able to get through the gateway to even being heard. A claim of a person in Mr. Light's position that he has been sentenced above the statutory maximum because he doesn't have the three requisite predicate offenses is certainly a proper grounds for applying the Savings Clause and allowing him to get to his merits. But having got there, he has to be factually innocent. And the courts have held that again and again. Factual, actual innocence, differentiating it from legal innocence, and that is really the key. Mr. Light was sentenced as a career criminal, and it's not a guidelines issue, it's really a statutory issue. He's either an ACCA criminal, and he can be above the 120 months, or he can't. If he doesn't have the three, there's absolutely no question he's entitled to relief.
He's already served 10 years.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That is not disputable. He was found, when you go back and look at the record, it's a little difficult to distinguish exactly which three convictions were used. When he was sentenced, it appears that they used a drug conviction, a third degree drug conviction, a burglary conviction, and the vehicular injury conviction, which at that time was being considered a violent felony. There are other convictions in there. And when the issue arose in collateral relief in his 2255, there's reference to, well, if we throw out this or don't consider a particular drug conviction, which I don't think was ever considered when they sentenced him, he's still got the requisite three, but it's never clear which three. There's reference in some of his prior convictions that his previous juvenile convictions would count, something that came under attack.
You're not relying on those.
I'm sorry?
You're not relying on the juvenile convictions.
No, I'm not relying on them. But, I mean, it was referenced back. But always the courts came to the same conclusion, he's got three. As the law stands today, he has three. He has the two undisputed convictions, the burglary and the third-degree drug. And he's got the fleeing a police officer in a vehicle, which the Eighth Circuit flatly holds is a violent felony. He had that conviction when he was sentenced. He has it now. At this posture, it is his burden to show that he is factually innocent, and he can't show that. It is kind of a strange situation that one of the sentences that, or one of the convictions he had, which clearly counted when he was convicted, doesn't count now, and one which wasn't counting at that time does count. But that anomaly aside, we're still looking at the question of factual innocence at the 2241 stage. And he is not factually innocent. So if he meets all the other requirements, he gets through the gatekeeping requirements, he gets consideration of the merits, he still does not prevail. And that is without the juvenile convictions and without the vehicular injury conviction.
Mr. Forrest, could you help me with the Brown versus Caraway case? Did we, in fact, remand that to the district court in Indiana for resentencing? Is that what happened?
What happened there, Your Honor, was it was remanded, and I believe that a habeas corpus order was entered and our court then transferred it back to the district court where he was convicted. I didn't personally handle that case, and I'm trying to struggle to remember,
right,
because I was consulted about how it should be done, but it's a little unclear.
That's fine.
It's a puzzle.
That's
none of us wrote that case.
That was a difficult case. Are there any other questions that the court would have for me?
Yes. Sorry. I guess my concern, Mr. Correz, is you're asking us at this point to affirm on the basis of an issue that really hasn't been considered by anybody else before.
That yes.
Is whether the fleeing in a motor vehicle conviction under Minnesota law qualifies. There hasn't been any exploration in the district court, and I'm wondering, would it make sense for us to consider remanding to have that explored, kind of fully aired, where any record can be made and a district judge can make the decision?
That could be done. I really don't think it's necessary in this case, and let me say why.
Mm-hmm.
The district court found that Mr. Light had the opportunity to test the prior conviction, although we concede that the one he particularly raised was not at issue. But the district court found that, again, based on the record that it had in the PSI, that there were enough other convictions there, and he had not met his burden of showing that was not the case. And that is still the case today. He's never met a burden that he didn't have the three. He probably is correct, or I think he is correct, that the injury in the vehicular injury would not count under today's law. But it still doesn't get him where he needs to be, and sending it back on the issue of the fleeing is a bit superfluous without him making the showing otherwise that he doesn't have three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 1 minute, counsel.
Your Honor, I'd just like to summarize that the government has conceded that Mr. Light's claim is the type of claim that meets the three Davenport factors. It has conceded that criminal vehicular operation no longer qualifies as a violent felony, and that it is not relying on his juvenile adjudications to dispute his claim for relief, which really leaves us only with the fleeing conviction. And as we've explained, that does not qualify either. So whether Mr. Light has in fact met his burden to show that there are not three, we do not dispute the third degree robbery or the third degree controlled substance crime, but we do dispute fleeing and criminal vehicular operation. Neither qualifies. Mr. Light is entitled to relief.
Thank you.
And the court thanks your firm and you very much for taking the case and being of much help to the court. Thank you very much.
My understanding is that it was ultimately transferred back to Delaware, and he was ultimately released.
But the resentencing was done back in Delaware. Okay.
But there might have been consensus on the question. Yeah. It sounds like there may not be on this one, so we'll see. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Court will be in recess.